Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 23rd day of October, 2019. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. In Chicago today, December corn finished a quarter lower at $3.87¾, the March at $3.99¾. Down a quarter, and the May futures a half lower at 406 at a quarter. Next year's December at 409 and a quarter lower. The bean futures in the November down a quarter of a cent, $9.33¾ the settlement price. January unchanged at 948 and a quarter, and the March at 959 and a half, down a quarter of a cent. Next year's November at 972 at a quarter, a penny lower. Bean oil down 27 cents. Bean meal up $1.70. July soft red winter wheat at 534 and a half up one. Live cattle futures were up 32 and a half cents. Feeders $1.32½ higher, and lean hogs up 32 and a half. Jackie Vakes of Total Farm Marketing now joins us. Hey, good afternoon to you, Jackie. Thanks for being with us.
Well, it's great to be here, Todd. Thank you.
Let's start where we always do, with those support and resistance levels for the week.
Yeah, and unfortunately, you know, they've changed. There's no question about that. This last week's action brought them down some. Support now in December, corn 361, 313, and 237. 391, 415, 439 are resistance numbers. In March, we have $4 as support, 395, and then 324. And upper resistance 425 and 448. On beans, I've switched to January. First notice day for November contract will be next week. And so January has support at 913, 903, and 891. Resistance at 920, 930, and 948. On March, support 951, 913, 839. And then resistance at 960, 997, and 1034.
In your opinion, what issues are impacting the market?
I'm glad you asked that, because there have been a lot of clients wondering about what the heck is going on, you know, because we're still way behind. We've had the frost, we've had everything else, and then yesterday we started out like gangbusters, and we kind of peter out toward the end. Today we're just, you know, it's a really tight trading range, basically, and so I think when you look at it, we have to remember that there are a lot of things going on at this time of year. We are in harvest, and there's sales of old crop being made, you know, on every bounce in corn or beans. There are contracts that have to be fulfilled by the end of October. And when you sell to the commercial, they sell the futures to protect themselves from having paid you too much. Now, you know, the opposite side should be that a producer buys the futures or buys a call when he sells, because he fears that he sold too low. Unfortunately, we don't see that happen, but the market has become a lot more balanced since we have the index traders on the board. They can only buy the market or be spread, so they somewhat take the place of the farmer, and that helps us. We've lost beans in the Dakotas, but, you know, that's a double-edged sword, Todd. It reduces carryout, perhaps, but it also reduces the availability of beans for the Pacific Northwest. And if you looked at inspections this week, China mainland took a bunch of beans out of Pacific Northwest again, and nothing from anywhere else. Strength of the U.S. dollar, you know, is certainly having an impact. And it's because we're going to the end of the year, we're in the last quarter of the year, now we're looking forward. And so the implied drop in global growth, you know, due to the trade wars, is resulting in lower demand. And so you're looking at it and saying, oh, my goodness. So what do we need? We need a Fed cut in rates. We need a better stock market, because the commodities have really joined themselves with the stock market. In fact, Bloomberg has a good article about it. And that's pretty hard to do, you know, at a stock market at the levels that we're at. So I want our listeners to realize that these markets aren't necessarily just reflecting the value of something, but they're reflecting what's going on in the marketplace. And at harvest time, when you sell, the commercial sells.
What does the player sheet look like?
Yeah, I didn't have any managed money this week, but I thought that they might find this interesting. You know, in the last 5 days, they've sold a net of 15,500 corn. Now, one day might be up 7,000, next day might be down 10,000, you know, but it came out to net 15,500 short. And beans, they bought 10,000 net, and they bought 8,000 wheat. And so kind of interesting. You know, I think this, too, is another good thing to look at, because it just kind of gives you an idea of why the market moves as much as it does. You know, when you have when you have the funds in there who do not, there's nothing that governs them from being short or long. And you have a market that kind of is lumbering like we've been doing, and then having spikes, you're going to see that type of thing happen. And that affects everything.
You mentioned the P&W and exports of soybeans. What do exports in general look like?
Well, our expectations, there was a sale of 128,000 metric tons of beans this morning to Unknown, which, you know, we believe is China itself. And so from expectations, you know, anywhere from 800 to 1.6 million metric tons of beans for tomorrow, 400 to 700 million on corn, 300 to 600, and I said million, and I'm wrong, it's 1,000. When we look at last week, we came in at 1.6 on beans. So, you know, everybody says, well, how can we be at 1.6? You know, China's not buying, but we're seeing tremendous amounts of buying coming out of Mexico, Thailand, a lot of places that you didn't see it before at these aggressive paces. So we're thankful for that.
We've been talking about the bushels that are at risk in the Dakotas. Have you reevaluated that based on weather conditions?
I did. I did. It was interesting. I mean, you know, when you look at North Dakota was 65% mature on corn this week, and that means that they still have a million acres that are at risk, which is 146 million bushels. If you look at their bean side, they were only 20% harvested. It means they've got 5.5 million acres still there, and that's 192 million bushels. And that's using an average yield, not a pumped-up yield. South Dakota, they were mature on 74% of their corn acres, leaves 1.26 million acres, and that is 197 million bushels. And if you looked at their beans, they were only 33% harvested. So they still have 3.74 million acres to go. That's 165 million. So if you looked at corn, we went from 604 million last week to 343 million this week. And beans went down from 415 to 357. Beans didn't make nearly as much progress as what corn did. But, there, you know, each day that we go, each day that passes makes it tougher. And I've had quite a few clients, you know, who are in the plain states, and they're saying things like, you know, if guys didn't have their beans off before last week, they lost a lot of yield because they had very, very, very high winds, 60 to 80 miles an hour in a lot of places. So it'll be interesting to see how it all comes out.
Anything on the global front?
Oh, so much. You know, I'll start with China. You know, they're continuing to talk about maybe a partial agreement coming about. And, of course, I've always been looking around, why would China even want to agree with us on anything? Well, their monthly consumer inflation, they believe, is going to hit about 4% by 2020, by January. And that's primarily due to the higher pork prices and the inability of that Chinese bank to support the economy. You know, we've talked about this before. In the past, they just threw money at the market, or at one time, they even got their citizens to invest in stocks and spend money, which was a total loser for the citizens. So I don't think they'll fall for that again. But this is a really different playing ground, you know, one that begs for China to come to the table soon. You know, with the protests becoming more prevalent, the government, which is just a few people compared to the total population, they need to figure out how to put the brakes on these increased costs to the consumer, because I don't think you're going to see the protests stop no matter how hard they come down on them. When you look at Brazil, another really interesting scenario down there, you know, we've been talking about the dryness. And, you know, production in Brazil, I think, is probably going to go down just because we've had such an uneven start to the planting season. You know, irrigated guys couldn't get started. Guys who aren't irrigated had to wait. They've got to wait for rain. Mato Grosso is 41% planted compared to 51% last year. Rio Grande do Sul just started. The Mato Grosso Institute of Ag-X say that the farmers in Mato Grosso have sold 93% of their crop That's 6% from last up from last month, and much higher than last year. Now, here's the price. This is now you guys. We have to listen. At approximately $2.90 a bushel, where we know that sometimes it's $2 a bushel just the transport, and that was 22% higher than last year when the price was at $2.40. So, you know, and you know that the farmer is concerned and he needs money. Paraná, 33% planted and really bad germination. They've had to do a lot of replanting on beans, which messes up everything because they, you know, they do their second crop, safrina corn, after beans. And if that gets too late, that doesn't get done. But I wanted to give you guys an example of one of the areas in western Paraná in the city of Marquil, Canadudu, Rondo. The last rain they had was 0.4 of an inch on August 31st. So, you know, all of this doesn't guarantee necessarily that we're going to see a lower yield from down there, but production currently is at 124 million metric tons. But it's certainly concerning. And I'll wrap up here with Argentina. You know, they've got their elections coming up on Sunday for president. And the opinion polls are saying the Peronist Party is probably going to win, which is Alberto Fernandez and Cristina Kirchner, who used to be the president. Now, there's just so much turmoil down here. It wouldn't surprise me at all if they do win. And if he wins outright, there won't be a runoff. So then he would take over already at the beginning of December. But the question I think that comes into face is how are they going to handle things? You know, when you look at Peronists are more interventionalists, you know, and I think they're going to move toward doing something to try and fix the economy, which I would expect. But they like to do currency controls, price controls, export taxes on commodities, which I'm sure most farmers are just cringing at because Cristina Kirchner was just famous for upping that. Export controls, subsidies. So, you know, it's really hard to say if Fernandez wins, will he run the show or will Cristina Kirchner actually run the show from behind the scenes? I guess we'll have to find out.
Indeed, we will. Hey, thank you so much.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Todd. Have a great day.
You too. That, of course, is Jackie Vegg. She is with Total Farm Marketing by Stuart Peterson. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Gary Schnittke, agricultural economist. He's penned an article, as usual, for a Tuesday of this week on the Farm Doc Daily website. So it'll start to go down that article list. But you can find it pretty easily at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. It compares 2018 to 2019 in terms of yield and income state by state for both corn and soybeans. This is a nice comparison to give us producers an idea of how each part of the Corn Belt has been doing the last 2 years and where the differences are.
Yes, and as you would expect, if we're looking at a change from 2018 to 2019, the Eastern Corn Belt is looking at much lower revenue in 2019 versus 2018. Ohio, Indiana, and Illinois. Illinois is actually going to lead by these calculations the revenue declines from crop revenue. So those three states will have on average lower revenue from both corn and soybeans. And if we go out west, we could actually see some increases in revenue in 2019 versus 2018.
So I want to concentrate on four states, I think, or at least three. Illinois, Iowa, Nebraska, those are the top three corn-producing states in the nation. What's the difference between the three of them?
So if we look at Illinois, Illinois had a 210-bushel yield for corn in 2018. It's projected to have a 179-bushel yield for 2019, 31 bushels less. And if we just look at using the market year average prices for USDA is projecting, so if we take the 361 price for last year, right now USDA is projecting a 380 price for this coming year, so 19 cents higher. If we do that math, it still comes out to be $78 less revenue for Illinois farms for corn in 2019 versus 2018. So that yield decline of 31 bushels is pushing our revenue down per acre about $80 per acre.
Iowa, not so much of a difference.
Iowa actually goes up in revenue to a $22 increase. They only are projected to have a 4-bushel decline, going from 196 to 192, 4-bushel decline. But if we have that price increase, they will actually have higher revenue for corn in 2019.
And in Nebraska?
Nebraska is projected to have a 6-bushel lower yield in 2019 versus 2018. So 192 bushels in 2018, to 186, 6 bushels less in 2019. And that 6-bushel less, though, if we take the price increase in it, they still have a $14 increase in their revenue for 2019.
Well, it's probably worth mentioning what happens with soybeans, at least in Illinois.
Illinois, we're projecting, or USDA is projecting, a 51-bushel yield for 2019. That's 12.5 bushels less than the 63.5 bushel yield last year. That works out to be a $79 decrease in revenue. And we're actually, again, similar to corn, having a higher market year average price for 2019. WASD, USDA, is currently using a $9 price for 2019. The price last year was $8.48, so 52 cents less. $0.52 increase in price still results in that $79 decrease in revenue.
Illinois leading both losses.
Yeah. So Illinois is the leader here, which isn't the place to be, but Illinois is the state with the largest yield losses. Again, you can contribute that to the very high yields last year. So 210 bushels for corn, 63.5 bushels for soybeans last year were record yields. So if we bring them down, we're going to have lower revenue.
And then let's go with the two outlying states that we talked most about up front in the growing season. Ohio won the Eastern Corn Belt and South Dakota. And how do they fare?
So Ohio, 27 bushels less in corn, 187 to 160. They have 67 bushels less, or excuse me, $67 less per acre in revenue for corn. For soybeans, 56 bushels in 2018, 8 bushels less in 2019 for a change or lowering revenue of $43 per acre. So Ohio, Illinois, Indiana are sort of in that same boat where we're looking at 50-plus declines in revenue. South Dakota, on the other hand, yield in 2018 was 160. Yield in 2019 is 154, 6 bushels less. Price increases causes that to be an $8 revenue increase. For soybeans, 45 in 2018, 2 bushels less in 2019 to 43 bushels per acre, $5 increase in revenue. Again, you're seeing this pretty clear. Western Corn Belt has same to slightly higher revenue. Eastern Corn Belt has much lower revenue.
And these don't take into account prevent plant.
Obviously, we don't take into account prevent plant. And that's probably very crucial for Illinois, where we're looking at a 31-bushel decrease overall the state. That's going to vary across the state. Central Illinois is likely to have 20 to 25 bushel less. Northern Illinois probably closer to 30 to 40. And then you have to throw prevent plant. I mean, those prevent plant acres in there, it probably will work out that prevent plant will make more money than planting in those areas. So there's going to be a lot of variability across the state even.
Hey, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Gary Schnittke is an agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. You can read this article on the Farm Doc Daily website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. On this Wednesday, we're joined by Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated to take a look at the weather forecast. Let's start with the weather right here in the Midwest for corn and soybean harvest.
What do you think conditions will be like?
Well, I think it's going to be an all right environment for harvesting across the heart of the Midwest as we go forward through this next 10 days to 2 weeks. Now, with that said, there's a couple of disturbances that are going to pass through the region, and as usual, they will have a temporary disruption to farming activity. But as far as the bigger storm systems is concerned, there's not a lot of that. We have one system coming across the eastern Midwest in the Delta and Tennessee River Basin area tomorrow night going into Saturday morning. And that system will be fairly significant. So Ohio, Indiana, Kentucky areas down into Tennessee and Mississippi and Alabama will all see probably 1 to 3 inches of rain, some 4-inch-plus amounts possible as you get down into the Tennessee Basin. So that'll probably be the biggest disruption. But the rest of the Midwest just gets a couple of weak little systems coming and going, not likely to set back the soil conditions in a major way. Now, with that said, of course, we do have a lot of cold air that's coming up for next week. And some of that cold is already going to be present as we get into the second half of the weekend in the northern plains. It won't take long to overtake the entire country east of the Rocky Mountains, and that cold will be with us all week next week. And so drying rates are going to be sluggish, to say the least, and so that might be a little bit of an issue. But for the upper parts of the Midwest and northern plains, we might just freeze up the ground hard enough that some of these soggy fields might actually be workable.
You turn your attention to South America, where in parts of that country, because it's so big, on parts of Brazil should have started planting soybeans about a month ago. They were delayed as they were waiting for some rainfall. How are things going there?
Well, it's still a slow go, but we have had some better shower activity in the past week, and so the topsoil is improving in western and southern parts of the country. And as we go forward through this next several-day period, there will be more showers and thunderstorms, mostly occurring in the north and central parts of the production region. And then next week, we'll see more rain in the south. Now, with all that said, we have to be real careful because there is a region that's going to be relatively too dry for crops to develop in a long term without more moisture. And that area includes Mato Grosso do Sul and neighboring areas of northern Paraná and parts of western São Paulo, as well as parts of Bolivia. All that area there, they'll get some shower activity over the next 2 weeks, but it is going to be much lighter than normal, and the temperatures will be warmer than normal as well. So we will see a net loss in soil moisture in some of those areas and a rising level of concern about crop emergence and establishment in that area.
About in Argentina?
Argentina is still struggling with dryness in the west, although Cordoba, central parts of Cordoba, which is one of the more important producing provinces in the country, did get some significant rain this week. Some 1 to 3 inch amounts occurred in a small part of that province. And certainly the topsoil moisture situation is much better than it was, and so we are expecting to see more aggressive field work and better crop development to occur in that particular area. However, the rest of western Argentina still needs a good soaking rain like that on a more frequent basis. And we're going to see some erratic rains there, just like in Brazil, but I think there is going to be an ongoing concern about dryness in that region.
And thanks, Drew. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City and joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report.